Welcome to Radio Gorgeous. This is Donna Freed, and today I am speaking with Eve Crawford, who has started a petition to Parliament to urge the Ministry of Justice to disallow the release of counseling notes in rape cases and sexual assault cases. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Eve Crawford.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
So, obviously, we get to the icky part of what brought you to start this petition. Yeah. But first, let's talk about why and how lawyers have access to counseling notes in these cases.
So basically, the reason why is to try and prove that the defendant is in fact not guilty. It really is as simple as that. Unfortunately, sometimes people do lie about rape and sexual assault. It is sad that that happens, but it does happen. And that is why this is there, is to try and not send an innocent person to jail. However, the facts are 11 people are raped every hour in England and Wales alone, and it is astounding the conviction rates, how low they are in the UK. So whilst I do understand that, you know, this needs to be there, there are too many people being raped and sexually assaulted in the UK for this to stay in place.
Mm-hmm. And could you share with us what led you to, one, find this out, and then start the petition?
Yeah, so unfortunately, I actually found out because I was quite severely sexually assaulted in July 2016. And actually, at the time, I didn't want to press charges at all.
Why not?
Because the person who assaulted me was actually very close to me at the time. I never, ever in a million years would expect that behaviour from a friend, and it took me a long time to get my head around the fact of what he had done to me was so bad. Because we were friends, I kept trying to justify it that, you know, maybe I gave him the wrong impression and I did this and I did that. And then I realised, no, I didn't do any of that. It was his choice. He did that to me. And I also found out that he actually may have done this before to someone else. And as soon as I found that out, I felt like I needed to protect other women from going through what I had been through, because I had had a year of no sleep, literally developed the worst insomnia I've ever seen in my life, because the assault happened in my bedroom and I didn't feel safe in my house, and I would have panic attacks when I saw people that looked like him from the background. And I felt that I needed to do something to try and get closure for myself, and also to try and protect other women. And I know this happens to men as well, but this guy is a straight guy, so I knew it would be just women that I'd be protecting. So I reported it a year later. I then had a call from the charity Rape Crisis, which is a mandatory call that every victim of rape or sexual assault will get. And I spoke with a wonderful woman. She was really lovely, really put me at ease, and told me everything they could do to support me from this moment up until the trial. And part of that was counselling. They said I could have solo or group counselling, but strongly advised me to have neither until after my case was finished, because of this fact that defence lawyers can get into my counselling notes and use my own words against me in court. Yeah, I know.
It just boggles the mind.
Yeah,
and because that, the essence, the essential founding principle of counselling and therapy is confidentiality.
Exactly. And your reaction right now is exactly the same reaction I had when I was on the phone, and is exactly the same reaction when I've spoken to MPs, minor celebrities and the general public, like, nobody has any idea that this is going on unless you've been assaulted yourself. And it is, I mean, I remember being absolutely dumbfounded. It was like as if the air had just gone out of like my whole body, and I couldn't believe, firstly, how many people they are going to have this conversation with. And I could tell the woman was really hesitant to like tell me why. And it was almost as if she was worried how my reaction was going to be, because would I be angry and be quite aggressive, or would I be? Yeah, exactly. I just remember, and I remember this conversation as clear as day, and I just laughed. Like, I let out this really nervous giggle,
dumbfounded.
I couldn't believe that this was allowed. Like, 85,000 women and 12,000 men are raped in England and Wales alone, and counselling acts as a lifeline to these victims that have fallen victim to such an awful crime. They need counselling, and we're not giving it to them. Or we are giving it to them, but we're warning them not to.
I'm especially dumbfounded because I was raped in New York, and I got counselling that night, mm-hmm. and thereafter. And only if this has happened to you, do you understand that it is not just a physical event. Mm-hmm. It ripped the floor out of my life. Mm-hmm. It wiped it out.
Yeah.
It was everything. It is one of those moments of before and after, and you are changed.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine that if I had been told, oh, but by the way.
Yeah.
Because I remember when the woman called me to do the counseling, the first thing, you know, one of the things I talked about was that I feel like it's my own fault.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why I felt like it's my own fault is because that was a way to have control. But if I had said that,
yeah,
that could be used by my rapist.
Exactly.
To get off scot-free.
Exactly. And I think that another very frustrating thing is I've actually spoken to a lot of, I don't want to use the word victim because that sounds awful. I have to use the word victim for the petition for legal reasons, but I'm going to start using the word survivors because that's what we are.
And
warriors.
It's not the only thing that ever happened
yeah,
to us.
Exactly.
many other things.
Yes, exactly. And I've been speaking with so many amazing, amazing survivors, men and women, who have all come forward, and it's been astounding how many people have contacted me. And I've spoken to people who, like myself, denied counselling because they wanted to make sure there was no potential repercussions in court. I've spoken with people who felt forced to hand over their counselling notes because the jury are told if you refuse your counselling notes. So it automatically makes you look like a liar, makes you look like you're having something to hide. So the CPS will tell you to hand over your notes. So I've spoken to victims like that. But the thing is, that's so common, and I had it with myself in sentencing, is the defendant is entitled to as much counselling as they want.
Wow.
Yeah, so I had to sit there in sentencing, and I will never forget this moment. And if I would have had counselling, I really feel like I would be, I would have felt like I would have dealt with it a lot better than maybe I have now. And people think that I've dealt with it well, but I haven't. I haven't.
Yeah.
And I had to sit there in sentencing, and the guy that assaulted me, he went for a psychotherapy analysis, which is a couple of sessions with a psychotherapist to work out whether he will do this again.
Wow.
Yeah. So I had to sit there and listen to how incredibly sorry he was that he'd done this, and that 20 minutes of bad behaviour couldn't fault a lifetime of good behaviour. And I just sat there and I was like, psychotherapy sounds a lot like counselling.
Yeah.
So he'd been to as many sessions as he wanted, and he could have talked about the trial, he could have talked about whatever he wanted about his behaviour last night. He's been with a professional and spoken about that. My trial finished in April, and I'm not going to get counselling for at least another year.
How is that possible?
What, with the wait time?
Yeah, and how is it possible that he didn't have to wait?
because he just didn't, does he? He did it. He gets as much support as he wants. Like, it's awful. It really is awful.
Well, and the thing about therapy is that they can break confidentiality in cases where they think, you know, this person is going to kill someone,
yeah,
or rape someone.
Yeah.
But then they can break it for the rapist.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense, yeah, whatsoever. So I really am dumbfounded by this. I do understand that counseling notes aren't necessarily,
mm-hmm,
full detailed,
yeah,
you know, sort of documented events. But the very idea that you are not in a safe space,
mm-hmm,
it makes the space unsafe. And yeah, that's the whole point of therapy.
And the thing is as well is, counselling notes, they do something called moral counselling, which is where they, if they're speaking to someone who's fallen victim to a crime like this, they may write limited notes because they know that their words could be used against them in court. So just as we're having this conversation today, they could be speaking for an hour to a counsellor, and then there may be like 3 or 4 sentences written down of that session. However, if you know, the counsellor goes on maternity leave or they move to a different part of the country, those counselling notes are not going to have anything there for the next counsellor. So the survivor then has to start again from scratch. And it's, right, just not fair.
Yeah.
You know?
It seems like once you're put upon,
yeah,
yeah, that's to keep getting put upon,
yeah,
in this situation. I'm very puzzled that no one has come forward to, you know, complain, speak about, mm-hmm, this previously. So how did you pluck up the courage after plucking up the courage after a year and then, you know, sort of putting, and I'm surprised because my rapist told me not to call the police, and it happened in my entryway. So he, mm, knew where I lived, and he said, "I have a gun. I know where you live. I'll know if you call the police." But as I was walking up the stairs, I felt enough had been taken from me,
yeah,
and my right to report something for, yeah, myself, do something for myself.
And you're so brave for doing
it.
That.
Just, I was like, nope. You're not taking that from me. You're taking a lot, but not that. Sorry.
Exactly.
And you didn't do that, but it was to protect other people.
Yeah.
And that has been your motivation to get this petition,
yeah,
signed as well.
I feel so, but also the night that it happened, so I'm, just for radio purposes, I'm very small. I'm 5'2", and I'm from just north of Birmingham, and all my friends call me the little feisty one, because I'm the first person that usually speaks up and says if something's wrong, I'll stand up for what I believe in, and I've always been that way inclined. And I always thought that if I ever fell victim to a crime like this, you know, when you talk about it with your friends, like, I always thought that I'd, you know, it's fight or flight, and I would punch the guy and, like, do some crazy martial arts move and, like, run off and, like, save the day. And I shocked myself that day because I was actually asleep when it happened, and I remember waking up and I just froze, and I literally had no control over my body, and I was just so scared. And I just remember, like, pushing myself, like, to a wall and, like, just pretending I was asleep. Like, literally, like, playing dead. And I remember being more disappointed with myself for how I acted. Like, I hated myself for, like, a whole year. I was just like, everyone calls you the feisty one. You're so, like, you're so brave usually, and you're so, like, scrappy and whatever. And I was so, so disappointed with myself for how I behaved. And things I used to say in my head to myself were just, if I said them out loud, anyone would just be like, geez, calm down. Like, but when my trial was finished, I just felt like this guy, he was found guilty, and I just felt like this surge of just, like, I felt like my old self was coming back, and it's still not back yet, but I felt like I got this, like, power vault of, like, just feistiness back, and I was just, I just wanted to do it to protect other people, because if my friends were so great to me going through this, and I found it's not necessarily about when you've been raped, it's if, from, you know, speaking to my friends that have never spoken about stuff that have happened to them, but will come forward and speak to someone else who's been through it. And there were so many of my friends that had been through this that it just really powered me through to just stand up and just try and do something for these people that have just had something awful happen to them, and it's not fair, and it's not fair that they are then treated like this by the system. It's not. So, yeah.
I had a similar thing that I couldn't scream.
Mm.
And the self-loathing,
yeah,
and disgust and punishment of myself and fear,
yeah,
for so long. And you doing this helps give us our voices back.
Yeah. Well, that's surprising you say that. We are using the Twitter handle on Twitter, hashtag silent no more, because it's exactly that. There are victims that have been silenced, and they were silenced by not getting counselling, and I want them to not be silent anymore. So you just exactly hit the nail on the head there.
Fantastic. There will be a link to the petition,
yeah,
on the website. As you say, there's a hashtag,
yeah,
on Twitter.
Yeah, silent.
Excellent.
No more.
Silent no more. Also, so I know the Labour MP Jim Fitzpatrick is supporting this.
Yeah, and also I had a letter that came through the post on Friday from the Leader of the Opposition, Jeremy Corbyn. Yeah, who he is head of the campaign, and he is fully supporting it, fully backing it. He also was disgusted to hear that this is happening, and he's also passing on to the Shadow Minister, and people are listening. People are listening that this is happening, and hopefully if we get 100,000 signatures, we can change the law.
So. Absolutely. So, and we need them by January 1st. We have over 3,000, you know, so I'm taking ownership of this as well now. I'm part of the movement.
You could be part of the movement. Push, push, push.
Exactly. 3,000 signatures so far. So at 10,000 signatures, the government responds.
Yes.
At 100,000, it's debated in,
yes,
Parliament.
However, I will just point out, at 10,000 signatures, the government will respond. However, we have already had a statement from the Ministry of Justice stating that the Ministry of Justice already protects victims of crimes of these natures by the victim has to hand over their counselling notes, which is how they are protected. However, as I did explain earlier, a victim of a crime of this nature does have to hand them over, but the jury will be told if they haven't handed them over. So either the judge will request them, or the jury will be told, which automatically makes the victim look like a liar. So whilst that is in place, it's not really.
Yeah, no. And also, as you also pointed out, sometimes people feel pressured,
yeah,
to turn them over. And I did see that there was a study in 2013, and it wasn't clear,
yeah,
in a bunch of cases whether the patient, you know, the,
yeah,
the client was, their permission was obtained.
Yeah.
So that's another problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So
exactly.
Because I think the counselors are also pressured.
Mm-hmm. 100%, definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so silent no more. Find the petition on our website. Please sign it. And please tell your MPs about it. That's what I did. I wrote to Rupa Hook this morning. And Eve, thank you so much. I'm personally grateful. And Radio Gorgeous thanks you for coming on and for putting forth this petition.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
For more brave and bold women, go to radiogorgeous.com.